From the creators of the hit kids podcast, Who Smarted, and Netflix's Brainchild, comes the adventurous world of Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH. Every episode follows Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs, making learning cool. This podcast is perfect for ages 6 and up. I'll tell you what, guys, I've listened to a few episodes and they're super fun. I really wish that my son had had this podcast when he was younger and growing up. These episodes drop every Thursday. They're only about 15 minutes or so. The series explores themes like the stories behind math, critical thinking, code breaking, problem solving, and more. Each one is stacked with so much laughter that your kids won't even realize how much they're learning. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids, and you can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back, and now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact. Hey everyone, welcome back. So I am late with this episode, so you're going to get 2-for-1 this week, but I had to get this out to you. I was traveling. I was in Nashville last week. I was on Today in Nashville, and if you want to check that out, I posted the video of it on my Instagram, so that's at the Divorce Survival Guide. Go on over there and check it out if you want. And so I was traveling, and when I'm not in my space, I get things fall off. Things fall off when I'm in my space, but when I'm traveling, holy moly, out of my element, out of my brain. I wanted to get this out to you. Again, it's a little bit late. I'm sorry. But I have with me today my friend Susan Hyatt. Susan is amazing. She is a master certified life coach. She's a best-selling author and TEDx speaker. Ugh, I love Susan. She is on a mission to disrupt the age and wage gaps, all of the gaps that hold women back. Her work empowers women, particularly those in midlife, to embrace their prime with fervor and enthusiasm. Hello! She's the creator of BEAR, a groundbreaking process that's inspired women all over the world to stop shrinking their bodies and start expanding their lives. She's such an amazing hype woman. I absolutely adore her. And this conversation is so fun because we kind of go all over the map. And I let you in on kind of a secret, something that I did recently. So listen up. All right. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Susan Hyatt. Susan Hyatt, I am so fucking excited to have you on our show. At last.
I mean, at last. And I am here with the best-selling author of The D Word. I couldn't be more delighted.
I love and adore you. And back at you with your book, Bear. So listen, we've been not circling each other, but we've been friends for a decade. I don't even know.
Mean, I think probably since they allowed us to get on the Facebook.
I think that's pretty much it.
I think it goes that far back.
I think you're right. So I'm really excited that we're going to get to have this conversation. You know, we can go all over the map. Let's start. You and I are both women of a certain age.
How old are you?
I am 53.
Okay.
How old are
you? You're in your prime also.
I am. How old are you?
50.
Oh, you're 50. Okay.
Yeah, I'm older than Jesus Christ. I'm older than everybody.
I'm about to turn 51 in May.
Oh my God. Yeah. Congratulations. Well, listen, here we are over the hill, but we're in our prime. Let's talk about, so we think about being in our prime, like women being in their sexual prime, like, I don't know, I'm postmenopausal, so I don't really feel like I'm in my quote prime. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you that we're in our prime?
I think it means like our area of greatest opportunity. So, right. When you think about what happens as women age, we're told, you know, get this anti-aging stuff to put on you. And, you know, hey, like women of a certain age shouldn't talk like that, dress like that, be like that. And I'm really out, per usual, to disrupt the wage gap, the confidence gap, the leisure gap, all of the gaps. And I'm on a mission also to create an atmosphere for women who are in midlife to really embrace it. You know, if you look at all of the stuff about like, oh, there's the maiden and then there's the mother and then there's the crone, right? So it's like
the crone.
And the crone is typically depicted as like this haggard, like.
She's like the witch from Princess Bride,
right?
She's that's the crone.
Like crippling along, you know. And I think that that's what culture at large that values whiteness, thinness, and youth above all else as a woman's currency to reclaim it. Because in between the mother, and not all of us are mothers, right? But between the mother and the crone, there's the queendom, right? There's this place in our lives where we are of an age where hopefully we're no longer concerned about the male gaze. We're concerned about our own gaze. Mm-hmm. We are no longer beholden to reproduction. We are free from so many things that maybe have kept us from doing what the hell we want, how we want, when we want. And so right now we're at this age where it's like, you know what? I'm going to fucking slay this. All right. I'm going to go all the places. I'm going to do all the things. I'm going to dress the way I want. I'm going to travel where I want to go. I'm going to have impact in the world in these certain ways. And yeah, there's no haggard old crone happening up in here. Okay. We're going to do it all the way.
We're going to do it our way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I love about you is, well, so many things I love about you, but, you know, you are never afraid, first of all, to say it as you see it and to wear it as you want it. if you guys go check out Susan's Instagram, I mean, she's fucking fabulous, right? And you have this way of just embodying your body and being the queen, as you say.
Like, what's the alternative, right? Like, that's where I'm sort of like, what, are we rolling up the sidewalk on feeling amazing? No, we are not. I appreciate those compliments. But, like, you know, I wasn't always, right? When people celebrate youth, I was a pretty fabulous 20-something, but I wouldn't go back to the mindset and the fear and the lack of confidence that I had in my 20s for anything. Thankfully, same. I mean, I have a daughter who, I mean, she, all these kids are on their own journey, but at 23, I'm like taking notes from her. I'm like, look at what happens, right? When you celebrate who you are from a young age and you're not beholden to the male gaze, et cetera. And so, you know, she's very free in her body as well, but I didn't learn that till later. I was like covering myself up in Talbot's beige suits and hiding.
Susan basically wears like hot pink like right now. That's basically your signature color, but or all the colors. I feel like it's so interesting because I have, you know, my son is 18 and I will still, you know, my body changed so much in the last 5 years, just through menopause, through COVID, through I had mold poisoning, like all sorts of stuff, gained a lot of weight that I like at the end of the day, this like this is my body now. But
that's how your body is appearing. Yep.
That is how my body is appearing. But it's been really difficult and challenging to embrace and to not feel shitty because it was like a very sudden felt to me like a very sudden change. But what I love is that my son, who's 18, and his friends are like, what are you talking about? You're fucking fabulous. You need to love your body. Don't cover that up. Like, yes. Like if I like, I'm like, I don't know, you guys, is this okay? And they're like, slay. And I've got slay queen. And I have like these 18-year-old white boys who are like hyping me up.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, man, we did that.
Yeah.
We did that.
And I think for anyone listening, right, like it is impossible if you identify as a woman to escape. I don't care how body positive a house you grew up in. It is impossible to escape the messages that we receive from culture at large. It's everywhere. We are steeped in it that thin is better. Mm-hmm. And to reclaim and say, no, it's not. And yes, I am postmenopausal and I weigh X number. The facts are I'm postmenopausal and I weigh X number of pounds more than I did 4 years ago. And also, I'm going to love it. I'm going to show up fully in it. You know, I'm going to celebrate this body. And right, like when you do that, then you have people like you had respond back to you like, slay. Right.
It's,
I mean, the only people looking at Lizzo and being critical are assholes, right? You go to Lizzo's Instagram and you, it's like, yes,
right.
Yes. Shake it. Yeah. Show me.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, so, and it's so hard, right? Cause we have, you and I at this age have all of the messaging that came before it. Right. Yep. And I, you know, and for us, to move beyond that is it's huge. It's enormous. It's difficult. It's like it's Herculean. Let's kind of talk about that, right? Like what is the inner work in your mind to get from who you were in your 20s? Because I think we were very similar. I, you know, definitely identify as a fierce codependent. I had no self-esteem. I was a mess. I was a mess in my 20s. Holy shit. But boy, was I skinny.
Oh, right. We were skinny.
And at the time, I didn't even know that that was like a thing, right? Because it's just what I was. So tell me about your journey from whatever, however you define how you were in your 20s. What was the healing journey for you?
Well, I definitely was someone who, like many women that I talk to, that we talk to, I am a rape survivor. So I experienced sexual trauma at 21. And that's not where my journey with food and body began. It began actually when I was 12, you know, received messages from family of origin that like, listen, I was the teeny tiniest little thing. But I was the fat one of the family. Right. It doesn't matter if it's true. It matters what you believe in terms of programming from your family of origin. And so I was eating a box of snack wells. Remember all that fat free craze we went through? I mean, I would be like binging on fat free foods and yo-yo dieting. But when I hit 21 and was in shock from a rape, that started a whole different level of disassociating from my body and entertaining harmful thoughts about what my value was based on. And it was very much based on covering up and protecting myself while at the same time taking up as little space as possible. And so the journey that I went on and then the bare methodology that I created eventually was based on understanding how the diet that you're entertaining is not just the food you're putting in your mouth. Your diet is everything in your environment. So what are you reading, listening to, discussions you're having, thoughts you're harboring, and doing an environmental detox of all of the harmful messages coming at you and all of the mindset work that you need to do to get over this belief that my value is how little space I can take up. I mean, if you think about that, that's what a diet is. Like, let's have you take up the least amount of space as possible physically.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that when I quit dieting, I had to sort of recognize too, it's right. It's this entire industry, $60 billion industry, right? That is geared towards having you disconnect from yourself and your feelings. And right. Because now we're taught that, like, well, your feelings of hunger, they're invalid, right? Really, it's, you're probably not hungry. Maybe you're just thirsty.
Oh my God. That's my favorite one. I can't believe
you're not hungry. That one up.
It's like, bitch, I'm not thirsty. Do I look dehydrated? I'm hungry. Give me some food.
Give me some fucking food. I'm not bored. I'm hungry. Right. And also this idea that, like, emotional eating is somehow a sin, right? Emotional eating is the worst thing that we can do. It's called self-care, motherfuckers.
It absolutely is a coping mechanism.
Self-soothing. It is self-soothing. It makes me feel nurtured in my body, right? But all of this has been designed to disconnect us from ourselves and our feelings. So it's don't take up space, and also what you're feeling is wrong. So now we get to gaslight ourselves, and or the industry is gaslighting us.
Absolutely.
And
it really is exhausting. And it's no wonder then if you end up in midlife and you hit menopause and our bodies start changing because our hormones are changing and there's a lot happening, that also that's wrong. That something's gone wrong. My body is now doing these different things. And that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, figure out, like, oh, my estrogen's low, or I recently found out my D levels, D vitamin levels were so in the toilet that I had no idea. And when I started taking that supplement, I was like, oh, I feel more like myself again. So it's not like there aren't hormonal things happening that can be adjusted, but the idea that whatever's happening with our bodies, whether it's, think about it, puberty and menopause.
Same thing.
Right?
Same right. Thing.
And at both of those times in a woman's life, we're made to feel ashamed about what's happening in our bodies.
That's right. That's right. And you know what's the thing, the way that we talk about menopause can be so interesting, right? Like, I remember having this sort of narrative about that, like, my body's rebelling against me. Mm-hmm. My body hates me. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, my body is going through a really natural change right now that's, like, yeah, fucking me up for sure.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I woke up in the middle of the night last night. You know, it's like the insomnia and all the things that happen are challenging.
They're real. They are real. And like you said, like, I went on hormones finally, bioidentical hormones a couple of a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Changed my life. Changed my fucking life. And I said to my doctor, I said, you know, what should I expect? And she said, you should expect to feel like yourself again. Mm. And that's exactly what happened. No more hot flashes, no more night sweats, no more waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and not being able to get back to sleep. And, you know, and no more crippling, overwhelming depression. Now, that and, like, my antidepressants and other things and my vitamin D, right? But, like, yeah, there are ways that we can rebalance ourselves that again are self-care.
Absolutely, right? Self-care.
Absolutely. And, you know, but not this negative, awful thing that should be, you know, that we should be croned about.
Right? Exactly. And that there's something wrong with being of a menopausal age. It's like, this is actually a big time in our lives where we can celebrate it or we can make ourselves feel bad about it and that something's wrong with us. And, oh my God, like, I'm like, bring this shit on. Okay. I'm ready for my queendom, my cronedom. Bow the fuck down. All right. Here we are, the wisest we've ever been, with the most freedom we've ever had. And the reason why culture at large wants to discard us or shame us is because a woman who's wise and sick of everybody's shit, okay, we're dangerous to the status quo.
We are very dangerous. We are very dangerous. I love it too. And you know what? You know, there are so many things about women that are perceived as dangerous. I mean, you know, and then belittled or squashed or not studied or whatever, right? Our sexuality, for one thing, right? So I had an experience recently that I have not actually shared with anybody except my sister-in-law. And now I'm going to share it with all of you. This experience that I had was, you know what? I'm going to tell it after the break. Hold on. We're going to take a really quick break. You guys are going to have to come back after the break. Dun, dun, dun.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Hey, are you a parent of a teenager? Are you feeling overwhelmed about how to be what they need while also holding limits and boundaries that keep them safe? Are you tired of conversations that negate how messy this season of parenting is? Well, I've got you. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline trainer, parent coach, and the host of the Joyful Courage podcast. Every week, I come to you with an interview, digging into tough topics with experts I trust and solo shows that go deep into the personal growth and mindset needed to raise teens in a way that grows them into confident, capable young people. I am not afraid of getting real about the intersection of conscious parenting and the teen years, while also bringing in vulnerability, humor, and lightness. I'm walking the path with you and honored to serve. Listen to Joyful Courage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts.
Okay, so now I'm going to tell you my little secret about what I did. So because of menopause, right, and feeling like my body was broken, I've also, and like things changing sexually and not having a sexual partner, by the way, and the ones that I've had recently really not, don't know what they're doing. I'm sorry. How do you get to be the age of like 50 something and not know how to work a woman's body? Like there's no excuse for this.
None.
Bye. And right. And I have to take responsibility for the fact that like, I just wasn't all that like clued into my own body. Really, right? Because also there's not a lot of messaging about that. We don't really talk about that. Like women's bodies, the way that they function, the way that they orgasm, the way that they experience pleasure, they're really different. We also all have most of us have sexual trauma. And so we have scar tissue, we have, you know, walls built up physiologically, all of that, right? So I went and I saw a somatic sexologist.
I've never heard this title. I'm obsessed already.
I'm going to send you his link. He was amazing. This happened because I texted a friend of mine who is a body worker and she's in with all of this like female anatomy body. She does something called Take Back the Speculum, where she teaches women like how to like do their own speculum. So it's not this awful traumatic experience every time we go to the fucking gynecologist, right?
Wow.
Like it doesn't need to be painful, all of that, right? So I texted her and I said, like, I need a, after having a really just bad sexual experience. And I said, listen, are there male sex workers out there because who actually know what the fuck they're doing? Because I'm tired of this. And the last thing I want to do is go to my grave, not experiencing the full breadth of my pleasure capacity.
Oh, this story is the best. Okay, continue.
Okay.
On the edge of my seat.
I know this is supposed to be you on my show, but we're having a conversation. So I'll get to the meat. So anyway, she said, actually, what you need is this. And she told me about this guy. And so I looked at his website and I was like, oh, this is exactly what I need. And it's this entire somatic experience. It starts very, very slowly, carefully, with experiencing your body. What does your body need right now? Do you need support under your wrists? Do you need support behind your knees? And asking for, like, he trains you through this very slow process and asking for what you want and need. And so he's attuning you into your body, right? Really somatically tuning you in. And then it sort of moves. It can move and it doesn't have to. He's like, okay, so if you want, the next step would be like, you know, naked massage kind of thing. And Ooh. Then if interested, if your body says yes, the next step is he calls it genital mapping and sort of like a pelvic exploration, like inner whatever. You get it where I'm going.
Oh my God. And
Susan, apparently I have a ridiculous capacity for pleasure that I did not know I possessed.
Listen, I could have told you that, but whoa.
Yes. You have to have him on your show, I think.
I would absolutely love to have him on my show and have the Silver Foxes recap of listening to me talk to this guy. But okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so is this the type of thing that you go back for, or it's a one time?
So you can. Well, I mean, it's not about like, again, like he's not a sex worker. Like he is a somatic healer. And mm-hmm. for women who have trauma, like he works with the physiological and emotional trauma. He's got more certifications and degrees and like, I can't even begin to tell you the amount of, and like, you know, psychology and all of the things. And I, by the way, I would never have done it if he had not been recommended by my friend Pam, because I trust her so implicitly. And so I went in with a feeling of trust and openness to the process. But also, like, one of the things, it's like, if I go to my grave without experiencing myself sexually in this way, like that will be a deathbed regret. And I've known that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, my point is, you can go back. Yes. For people like who are having like a slower process with it and it mm-hmm. takes longer than like, absolutely, I could go back, but it was more about teaching myself.
He was like, you graduated.
He was like,
you have a PhD, like, ma'am.
He basically was like, I've actually never had a client have this much capacity for pleasure outside, out the gate. And I was wow. like, oh, because I went in there thinking I was broken. And he's like, and I left there being like, oh, I'm not the problem.
You are not the problem. Men not understanding how to pleasure a woman is the problem.
That is the problem. Right?
Wow.
And this is me at 53. 53.
Well, and like, I'm not surprised, because what year was it that a female researcher it was like 2000 something that they finally understood what the clitoris was, even how big it was, how long it was. Like, this was recent.
Yes, that's right. Like, it wasn't even in the anatomy, the female genital anatomy mapping,
right,
until like this century, I think, or last century.
And the thought, if I'm remembering correctly from what I read, the thought was in medical text, was that the clitoris was a failed penis.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It's a penis that just didn't want to come out.
And so right. it's that's like right. just no understanding whatsoever of the female body. Also, did you see the thing about how tampons and pads were only actual real blood was only tested on feminine hygiene products starting in 2018?
No, I did not.
So we grew up using products that weren't even properly tested. And only recently were they tested with actual menstrual blood, which, as we know, is very different than other blood.
Oh, my God. So of course, of course, right?
We've been like suffering in so many ways. So you know.
The reason I want to circle back, because the reason I was telling you that story about my thing was like how much women like it's so I think women's pleasure is so huge.
Yeah.
We experience pleasure in such a different way than men. And I think in a more holistic way, like that can include our entire body in a way that men like they don't know like. That's got to be intimidating and scary and right. No wonder they're trying to shrink us and control us.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And part of my journey with the Bear process is helping women understand that, I mean, we come into this world wired for pleasure from head to toe. And so it's really ludicrous to think that pleasure should only be experienced in these small ways and only after you get your work done and always later. Like everything that you experience from the environment you're in to the way that you spend your day to how you work, there are ways to build pleasure in because there's so many different kinds of pleasure, right? We're talking about sexual pleasure and intimacy. Yeah. Yeah. And physical touch, but there's all different kinds of pleasure, spiritual pleasure, intellectual pleasure. And we are starving when women are upset with their bodies that like my body has betrayed me. It is because what's missing is pleasure.
Yes, that's right.
And so listen, I hadn't even heard about a somatic healer in this way. So I will be letting all the peoples know. Like, hey,
listen, I'm going to send you his website and you will have a field day. I think that this is a really good segue into talking about what you talk about as big yes energy, which to me feels like a pleasure conversation, right?
It is a pleasure conversation. Yeah. So I definitely thrive on creating communities and events and retreats and coaching offers for women that help them tap into big yes energy. And for me, big yes energy is about saying yes to what you want to experience. So yes to pleasure, yes to how you want to live, yes to how you want to work, and shedding and peeling back the layers of all of the cultural expectations that are often a big fat no for us, that we really don't want any part of when we really get down to like, what are we really craving? And as you were saying, like on my deathbed, I didn't want one of my regrets to be that I had never fully sexually explored or experienced what was possible for me in this body. And often, when you look at the research on deathbed regrets, it's because people aren't saying yes to what they really want. And so that's what big yes energy is about.
So saying yes to all of the things. Now, and how do you feel like we can access that? Like when we, when women, right, when we have been sort of systematically disconnected from ourselves and our wants and our needs and what our yeses might be, how do we tap back into that? Especially like for my audience who maybe has like even in their marriages, right, in their relationships, they have been like shut down for so long that like, I know when I got out of my marriage, I didn't know what my favorite color was. I wouldn't even know what to say yes to.
Right. Yeah. And so there are some really simple ways. I actually was just talking to a client a couple of sessions ago, and she's an entrepreneur and she's a mom in partnership with a man. And she was saying that she just, I was basically encouraging her to, I was like, listen, you have to create time for yourself. You have to do things that fill you up. You have to take time in the morning for you, because she was just running like most women. And mm-hmm. she came back to me today and said, okay, I did all the homework you told me to do. And what I realized is that I'm walking on eggshells around this man and don't feel safe enough to take time for myself, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm not experiencing pleasure or saying yes to what I want because I'm scared to, right? So what you're saying is absolutely on That's point. Right. And so the thing that I would encourage people to do if they feel very disconnected from understanding what a yes might mean for them, this is going to sound a little silly and weird, but if you are scrolling on the interwebs and you find yourself feeling envious of certain things you see, like maybe you scroll past your neighbor and she seems to have the perfect family, or you scroll past a friend from college who always seems to be in a bathing suit on a yacht, or you scroll past, you know, a distant cousin who just, you know, sold her business for millions of dollars, and you feel so envious, just know that that is a breadcrumb towards what is possible for you and what it is you really crave. We misunderstand envy because women have been raised to think that competition and manipulation is the way to power. And what I encourage clients to do, and I do it myself, anytime I'm scrolling and I'm like, ah, look at her. And then I'm like, ooh, this is juicy. Like, why does this bother me? And I can always find it like, oh, I wish I had time to do X, Y, Z. Or, oh, gosh, I wish I had my basement cleaned out. I mean, it could be anything, right? But I want you to pay attention to what stops the scroll and like irritates the crap out of you where you feel envious. And then the other thing, the more positive thing that you could do in this way, there's a simple exercise that I have used since the beginning of my career, and it sounds cheesy, but it absolutely works. Mm-hmm. And it's called the happy basket. Oh, and it's basically you get like a laundry basket or, you know, any kind of basket you have where you can put stuff in it. Uh-huh. And you're going to be an investigative reporter over the next couple of weeks. And anything that tugs at you, I don't care how far-fetched or mundane it might seem. It could be like a beautiful dandelion that you pick. It could be a memory that you have of your kids when they were little, and you would write that on an index card, put it in the happy basket. But anything that gets a strong emotional response from you over the next couple of weeks, it goes in the basket. And then at the end of the couple of weeks, if you can have a buddy do it with you or a coach, it can be easier to recognize the patterns that are in the happy basket. So I have had clients build entire businesses based on this happy basket result that like, and listen, my clients are like, this sounds stupid as hell. I'm like, I'm telling you right now, just do it, because there are clues that are going to lead you to the next best yes decision for you. So at a minimum, you're going to reconnect to things that you're like, oh yeah, I do love that. Oh yeah, that is important to me. I thought I was passionless, but it turns out I really, really get hype about green living. Or you could find like, oh my God, there it is again. I really want to start a farm, you know, whatever it might be. It really is eye-opening though.
Okay, so how are you finding the things to put in the happy basket? Are they just like passing fleeting thoughts that you have? Or is this like as you're scrolling through Instagram? Like what is the, where does the stuff come from? I'm asking for everybody.
So both. It could be like you have this out of the blue meaningful conversation with your 18-year-old. And you're like, oh shit, that's got to go in the happy basket. Let me like make a note about that. Or as you're scrolling through Instagram or on Pinterest or wherever it might be, you're like, that outfit or that destination, yes, That gets a yes from me. It's going in the happy basket. So it's just like you are like a journalist for the next couple weeks, and you're collecting things that get your attention and tug at you emotionally. I've also done this on people. So if I'm having a particularly challenging time with one of my kids or my husband or a friend or whatever, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do a happy basket on them. I don't tell them. And sometimes the bar is low. It's like, oh, wow. You know, they responded to my text or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
But right. What I'm saying is like, it can help reconnect you to what is good and what it is that you like and remind you, like you're saying, you didn't even know what you liked. This is a good exercise to be like, this, not that.
Yes. Yes. I love the happy basket exercise, and I'm going to do it. And then I'm going to report back because I do need to do it. I do need to do it. There are things, we're not going to turn this into a coaching session, but yes, I love this. We need to take one more break. We will be right back because I want to talk a little bit more about, I want to talk about women and money. So y'all come right back.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. My name is Casey Davis. I'm a therapist, and I'm an author of the book, How to Keep House While Drowning, where I talk about ways to make it a little bit easier to take care of yourself when you're overwhelmed, stressed, have mental health issues, physical health issues, or maybe you're just in a hard season of life. Maybe you're looking for a place that you can come and listen to some practical advice. This is a podcast for all of the self-help rejects. We're going to talk about skills for survival and self-kindness, and I'm going to leave the pop psychology at the door. I promise not to tell you to meditate or to journal. We're just going to give you some really insightful conversations with hopefully some practical advice. So I don't believe you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps. I don't want you to just try harder, and I don't believe that laziness exists. So join me over on Struggle Care, where we can find compassionate solutions that help us function a little bit better.
Susan Hyatt, you are a self-made millionaire.
Yes.
How did you do that?
Well,
let's talk about women and money.
Women and money. Well, I'm sure many of you and many of your listeners have read the statistics that aren't great. You know,
nope.
That,
they're
you
terrible.
Know, when you look at the wage gap and then the domino effect that has on women, also coupled with women not feeling confident to negotiate for raises, our programming that we're bad at math and don't worry your pretty little head about that. And, you know, just marry well and your husband will take care of that. And
good
all of that
God.
Messaging really mm-hmm. is a recipe for disaster because women are retiring in poverty at higher rates than ever.
Yeah. Cause their husband and their husbands are dying, right? Or they're getting divorced or whatever it is. But this investment in somebody else being your retirement plan is kind of faulty.
And it's a terrible retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
Also a terrible insurance policy. I was somebody who grew up with programming around money, that money was hard to make, even harder to keep. You know, I came from a very working class, lower middle income family with not a lot of money to spare. And so I grew up with all of this, like, wow, like I wanted to be someone who earned a lot of money. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college and bought into the idea of like, go to college and get a good job and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yep.
And so I did that. came to realize that it was a little more complicated than that, particularly when I hadn't dealt with any of my money issues. I found myself, Scott and I, married with two very small babies and living paycheck to paycheck. I remember vividly, it was Christmas time and the Boy Scout Christmas tree farm had Christmas trees for $35. And I didn't have enough money in my checking account to go write a check for this Christmas tree. So I floated a check at my corner convenience store because that guy always took like 5-6 days to deposit your check. And I knew it would be good eventually.
Eventually.
Like, uh-huh. I remember crying in the car like we were, yeah. We were not poor, but we were broke, deciding that something had to change. And so entrepreneurship is what helped both of us earn more. But in terms of creating actual wealth, my husband, Scott, has worked in commercial real estate. He's 60 now. So for 35 years, he's worked in commercial real estate. And he would always, you know, be saying, like, we've really got to start doing what I help my clients do for a variety of reasons, you know, to build wealth for the long game. That's what we need to be doing. And I was very resistant to it. I did not have an investor's mindset at all. I was a very immediate gratification person. Like I would have a big sale and I would go spend it. We weren't keeping much of what we were earning, even when our earning became very high, which is also very common among entrepreneurs and women. I remember I started flipping houses when I was in residential real estate. And we started using the profit from flipping houses to invest in our first, it was a quadplex. We still own it. I had to really get into the mindset that like, okay, this money, this whatever it is, $100,000 today can become $1 million later and then pay you monthly to not do anything else. Right. It took me a long time to really buy into it, that it was possible. Through my company, through coaching, you know, my revenue has been multi-seven figures for a long time, but my actual wealth has come through investing that money in commercial real estate. I became really interested in teaching women about commercial real estate because less than 1% of assets managed are woman-owned, and less than 20% of the world's real estate is woman-owned. In the commercial real estate industry in particular, it is a white boys' club.
Absolutely.
80-something percent white male. And when I asked my own husband, I was like, other than me, how many clients do you have that are single women? Not women that are benefiting because their husbands are doing this, but like a woman who is the primary investor. And he was like, none. And I asked our commercial loan officer the same question. And it was like goose eggs. Now I live in Indiana, right? Those rates are higher other places, but I was like, you know what we need to do? Because this is a boys' club that women have been excluded from. We need to create a program, it's called Women Invested, where we teach women how to get up the capital to invest in commercial real estate and the benefits from it. Because the more we own the building, the less doors get shut in our face.
That's fucking brilliant.
I'm serious. I'm just like, I'm so hot under the collar about it because I'm just like, my own bank has given me shit.
You know, I'm just looking at like, first of all, I live in LA. So real estate prices, I mean, it is unimaginable. Like
in the Midwest.
This is not a place to invest by anymore, right? One of my best friends from college, she started investing in real estate in Los Angeles in 2003-04, and she is a multimillionaire. And I didn't have I had no money. I mean, I literally couldn't pay like my $20 bills, right? So there was no way I could do it. But, you know, I'm looking at it now and I'm like, God damn.
I know.
You know?
It really is something. And one great thing, I'm often joking about where I live, but one great thing about where we live is that we have investors from California, from New York, from, right? It's like not where you're living, but you can invest in commercial real estate in a stable market.
Right.
So, and not to say that there isn't opportunity in those places, it's just going to cost you a lot more to get started. Whereas most folks just getting started, I wouldn't recommend getting started there. It's easier to get started someplace here where it's like, hey, yeah, let's group you. And that's the other thing we're doing is putting people together in groups so that it's also the barriers lower. So like, okay, I don't have, you know, Sally Joe doesn't have $100,000 to get this started, but four of you might have $25,000 or 10 of you might have, right? And so you start investing with other people, which is also something we did, and then eventually get to a place where that 7 to 9.5% return, you can turn it into 12. And we've done things where we've sold things that we held for a long time, sold it, took those proceeds, invested in a bigger building.
Something bigger, right? It's Monopoly. You sell your houses and you buy motels or whatever, right?
It absolutely is Monopoly. It is Monopoly. And it definitely takes some mindset work because, like I said, I mean, Scott really worked on me for a long time before I could get over the, like, I have this money right now, though, in my hands, and you want me to give it away to this project and not touch it for how long? Like, you know, it really is for somebody like me who I was like happy to be earning it and happy to be spending it. And it took a little time for me to understand that, like, yeah, but you're not going to have the retirement that you want. You're not going to have the eventual lifestyle that you want unless you make some changes.
And, you know, this really is like the only way at this point in this country, or at least the most common way, right, to build wealth from the ground up is through real estate. Like, I don't really know of any other way. Otherwise, you're making money, right? But real estate is sort of the biggest way to build wealth.
I personally believe yes. Like, and we do have money in stocks, but there's such a difference, in my opinion, in the ability to leverage other people's money. I mean, that's with stocks, you're putting your money in, right? With real estate, I can take a little bit of my money and get the bank's money and leverage that money.
Right.
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 And so there's opportunity to leverage other people's money, and you have people paying you rent and tenants paying the mortgage. And so it's kind of like, wow, look at what's possible.
And this is, you know, as we're talking about building wealth for women, for us to be fully self-supporting, for us to be building something that, you know, men have been building for generations, right? Like forever.
Right.
And so for us to be consciously building that for ourselves and for our families, again, the reason I think that it's, you know, maybe so few women are doing it is because that's a scary prospect for the patriarchy to have to contend with. But fuck that.
Fuck that. I was recently, I am a fresh new member of AARP. And I was recently at an event where the vice president of investing for AARP was on a panel speaking, and she was quoting a lot of the statistics I'm quoting. And I went up to her after to talk about it with her. And I was saying to her, and I'll say to you, like, we might be later to the game, but once we learn investing, research shows that women outperform men in investing. We outperform them.
Really?
Yes. And she said, do you want to know why? And I said, yeah, tell me why. And she said, because research also shows that women are more stable in their thinking around the long hold, whereas men will make much riskier moves and lose more.
Because they're more emotional and volatile?
Yes. Yes. And so
weird.
One of the things I love to say is, like, just because you haven't gotten into it does not mean you can't be better at it than them. And so, you know, Scott's been doing this 35 years. And so I absolutely believe that he is better at it than me. And
sure.
However, However, he will say, like, I do have a better body compass, a better gauge for what's he's, you know, all spreadsheet. And I'm more like can see things that are unseen, you know, which I think a lot of women have that ability too. And I also think research is not going to show that, but I actually believe we're probably better at it than men because we're more tapped into our intuition.
Yes. There is research that's actually proven that we are more intuitive. And I was going to say that we are more intuitive. So we can look at a space and we can go, we can see what's possible with it or maybe what's not, right? Because we are far more intuitive.
And as women owning real estate, the other benefit other than your wealth is that it is also proven that we're better community members. So a woman owning a building, owning a block, owning an apartment complex is going to be a better steward of that property for the community.
Yeah.
So we're much less likely to gouge people or create conditions that aren't good for the community as a whole. And I will say, my husband is very kind-hearted. And also, I have many times had to say, just because we can doesn't mean we should, in terms of rent hikes, in terms of like, no, we are going to put new washers and dryers in for those people, right? So I do believe that women are better stewards.
I love this. I love this conversation. I love you.
Oh, thank you. I'll be right back.
Thank you, honey. So tell everyone where they can find you and learn a lot more about your goodness and your wisdom and all the things.
Well, so the website is SusanHyatt.co. On Instagram, Facebook, I'm at Susan Hyatt. If you're interested in Women Invested, it's womeninvested.com. And we are starting a new training, like a mini challenge that's almost free, and then a full-blown training soon. So yeah, get in on all this goodness.
Yes, get in on it. Susan Hyatt, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I love it. Such a great conversation. Thank you, love.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at the Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. My name is Casey Davis. I'm a therapist and I'm an author of the book, How to Keep House While Drowning, where I talk about ways to make it a little bit easier to take care of yourself when you're overwhelmed, stressed, have mental health issues, physical health issues, or maybe you're just in a hard season of life. Maybe you're looking for a place that you can come and listen to some practical advice. This is a podcast for all of the self-help rejects. We're going to talk about skills for survival and self-kindness. And I'm going to leave the pop psychology at the door. I promise not to tell you to meditate or to journal. We're just going to give you some really insightful conversations with hopefully some practical advice. So I don't believe you need to pick yourself up by the bootstraps. I don't want you to just try harder. And I don't believe that laziness exists. So join me over on Struggle Care, where we can find compassionate solutions that help us function a little bit better.